You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Here tonight with you, I am your host, as always, Jeff Herr, and with me, of course, the indubitable and soon-to-be imbibing Michael Engel. Mike, how's it going this evening?
That's true. That's a good adjective there. I have a bottle of that Crown Town Ale that came out today, so I'm going to give a real-time review of this. Just to kind of get an idea. So, I'm okay, I guess. I think I'm about to be a little bit better, but you know,
there you go. And if any of you have been to Kelly's at any point with us, you know, Michael Engel is a beer connoisseur, ladies and gentlemen. So get ready for a review.
From the, just the back of the label, it says that this is a golden blonde ale with bright citrus notes and just a hint of bitterness. So we agreed before we started recording that that pretty much is a Kansas City Royals type of beer.
Yep. And should fit pretty well with the Kansas City Royals fan base.
I think so.
Especially the ones that skew towards the Twitter.com demographic.
Especially in the last week.
Yes, especially in the last week. Speaking of which, we have finally some news in this offseason. It's been kind of tough to record when you have a podcast based solely on the Royals and there's nothing more than just a few whispers of them being interested in people. So we haven't really had much to talk about, but now we finally have some news. And we'll start with the biggest news of the week. That I think has fans kind of split. There were some meltdowns on Twitter because that's what Twitter does.
No, but hold on. Wait a minute.
This may surprise some of you, but people melt down on Twitter quite a bit.
I do.
But it didn't. You don't believe me, do you?
No.
You know, trust me on this one. You'll just have to take my word for it. It's not something. It didn't seem as bad as other past meltdowns, but it was there. But anyway, the impetus behind all of it was the Royals went out and signed Kendrys Morales 2 years, $17 million to play first base and DH for the Royals in 2015 and 2016 with, I believe, a mutual option for 2017.
Yep.
So that's where we're at, and just initial impressions from me are, in a vacuum, I'm on board with the Kendrys Morales signing. Last year, he was pretty awful, but, you know, over his career, he's shown a track record of being a solid hitter. So, you know, just if you just look at, hey, the Royals need offense, they signed Kendrys Morales, I'm fine with it. But in the context of the Royals organization, and especially in the context of how everything went down with Billy Butler. Now, I think sometimes it kind of seems like I always kind of jump to on the white horse for Billy Butler, and I kind of do. But at the same time, like, there's some legitimate, you know, airing of grievances, if you will, since we're in the holiday season, to be had here. Exactly. Because what have they been saying for the last 2 years? Basically, ever since Billy Butler has struggled, the Royals have publicly and privately expressed a strong desire to have some quote-unquote flexibility with the DH position. And it made sense, really, because they've got Sal Perez under contract for the next 6 years. They want to make sure that he's going to stay healthy. So the best way to do that is to have, you know, more or less be able to shift him out of that catcher position. And, you know, until about August, really, his track record was not only a good, great defensive catcher, but he had been showing up at the plate much more than people thought. So you wanted to keep him healthy, but still be able to keep his bat in the lineup. It makes total sense. You know, unfortunately, with Eric Hosmer only being able to play first base, with Sal Perez, you know, being either catcher or DH, and then Billy Butler not having any position besides first base, it was impossible to really rotate that too much without sitting one of those three players. And those are three players you didn't want to sit, any one of them. So it made sense why they wanted flexibility. If that's what they really wanted, then okay, you know, as much as I wanted to keep Butler, that was an unfortunate reality of his skill set, was that he didn't have that flexibility. He didn't provide them that. So if that's where you're going and that's what you want to do and that's why you want to get rid of Billy Butler, you know, I wouldn't want to get rid of him, but I at least understand the logic. So that was kind of the context of them letting Billy Butler go. But then at the same time, they go back and what do? They sign a offense-first player who, over the last couple of years, hasn't been really that much better than Billy Butler with, you know, just a few more home runs to his credit, and someone who can only play first base and DH and can play first base only about as well as Billy Butler, probably maybe marginally better. So what you've done is taken this idea of flexibility and giving yourself options with the lineup and gone nowhere with it. And they basically just signed Billy Butler again. And that's what annoyed me about it. Not so much that, you know, I think Kendrys Morales is a good fit, but he's no better of a fit than Billy Butler was. And they didn't think he was a fit for the team. So it's just, it goes back to the Royals front office and their inconsistencies with how they sign players, how they manage their roster, and how they communicate what they want versus what they actually do. Now, I understand it's not as simple as, hey, we want to do this and let's go do it and it's easy. You know, it's definitely not that simple. But, you know, even Dayton Moore went on MLB TV shortly after the Morales signing and basically admitted, hey, maybe we should have, well, didn't basically, he did admit, you know, hey, maybe we should have picked up Billy Butler's option because he didn't really say this, but more or less because, well, there was nothing else out there that really provided them that flexibility they wanted. And they ended up having to go back to a player who was very similar to Butler. So all things considered, I'm not unhappy with the move, but I am unhappy with the idea that the inconsistency with how the Royals presented what they wanted to do with that open position and what they actually did. But like I said, to Dayton Moore's credit, he did come out publicly and admit more or less that he made a mistake by letting Billy Butler go and therefore rectified it by signing Kendrys Morales. So overall, I'm not really upset about it. And, you know, I'm on board to at least see what happens. And it's not a huge amount of money. It's something that's, you know, decently easy to walk away from. And if he has anywhere close to a decent season and you really want to get, you know, even a decent season, but they wanted more from him and they want to get out from under his contract, you can probably trade him at some point. You might not get much for him, but you can trade him. So, you know, there's that. I mean, that's kind of my thoughts. Mike, what do you think of this?
Well, I was my initial reaction, because this was Thursday and that was the last day of the winter meetings. The Royals hadn't really done anything. They'd been kind of mentioned as talking to this guy or that guy or this team or what have you. And when I saw that they had an agreement with them, my first reaction was like, oh, no. Because, you know, Morales, if you look at his track record, he's a power hitter. He's a slugger. That's kind of what he does. He doesn't walk a whole lot, but he doesn't strike out a whole lot either. Not fast. You're very correct in basically he's Billy Butler, but switch hits and is a little bit older. And that's kind of what he is. I think that the Royals got to this point where they really did want to try that floating DH thing. And when you kind of looked at what happened, you know, they lost Aoki, they lost Butler, you know, and you really kind of had to have some kind of system where, you know, now you need to replace a right fielder. You need to get somebody who could DH or who could play the field on given days so somebody else could DH. And I think it worked out to probably be too many players they would have needed to get of a high quality to make it work. Because most of the time, you know, you would have ended up with a lineup that either took Alex Gordon or Lorenzo Cain out of the lineup or out of the defense, and just so they could DH. And you're losing value there in that particular situation, or you're in a situation where, you know, you've got Jerod Dyson or Christian Colon DHing. And I just don't think that it really worked out. And so Morales, you know, they probably had to tack on the second year because he didn't have a good year, but they were able to get it so that he's only getting $6.5 million this year, so it doesn't impact this year's payroll that much. And next year you've got, you know, some payroll coming off the books with Jeremy Guthrie and, you know, and whatnot. So I'm kind of okay with it. He's gives up a little bit of on base, but he may hit for more power. He's hit 30 homers before with the Angels, you know, 34 homers in 2009. And, you know, that's not a very easy stadium to hit home runs in. He hit 23 for the Mariners in 2013. He hit 7 for the Mariners after he was traded to them late in the season. So, you know, he's done it in some tough ballparks. It's just going to be a matter of, was his issue last season, he hit 218, got on base 274 clip and slugged 338. Was that a function of his being out, missing spring training and not starting until June because of, you know, hanging out there on the free agency because of the qualifying offer? Or is it because he's going to turn 32 this year and the decline's happening? So if it's just a matter of the reps, the timing, and everything, which is what he says it is, the Royals might have some kind of a bounce back player in their midst here. If it's an actual decline, then they've got 2 years of a guy who's on the downswing at a period where, you know, the window's starting to get a little tight. It's not closing necessarily, but it's tightening up. You know, Eric Hosmer is a free agent in after 2017. You've got a couple years there. Gordon's going to be, his option's going to come up after 2016. So, or after this season for 2016. So, you know, it's a little bit risky, but not from like a financial point. It's just a matter of Morales is going to be that guy and he's going to be in the lineup pretty much every day. They'll probably switch him out in some cases. But you know, generally, as a switch hitter, you know, it's going to be tough to, you know, keep his bat out of the lineup unless he gets hurt. So all told, yeah, it is a little bit of a weird signing, especially when they have indicated multiple times that they want to get away from that everyday DH. But at the same time, you know, there's only so much you can get done on the market. And, you know, once they finally got to him, a lot of guys had already signed that they might have taken a shot at. And so, you know, they got it money-wise, it's not too bad. Like you said, they could get away from it if they needed to. You know, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, tanks completely next year too. So, we'll definitely have to see what happens. I think he's going to DH pretty much all the time. I don't see him playing first unless Hosmer gets hurt. And then, you know, I don't know what that means for Sal Perez, because he's going to end up catching 150 games again, I'm sure. And that's not going to be good for him. When he's basically been on the downswing every single year at the plate. And, you know, it's Morales could be a big deal. If he hits 20 home runs, it's a win. If he hits 20 home runs over the life of the contract, that's a problem.
Yeah. And, you know, just just for a little context, if you want to, let's compare his last two quote-unquote full seasons. I say full because it's just 2012, he played in 134 games, but he had 522 plate appearances, so, you know, close enough to a full season.
Yeah.
But, and actually, if you look at 2012 and 2013, he was pretty consistent from year to year, mm-hmm. almost freakishly so. In 2012, his line was 273 batting average, 320 on base, 467 slugging, 787 OPS. With 116 strikeouts, 22 home runs, 73 RBIs. And then in 2013, he had 277, .336 on base, .449 slugging, .785 OPS, 114 strikeouts, 23 homers, and 80 RBIs. So pretty consistent year over year. But then if you compare those to the last two seasons, last two full seasons of Billy Butler, which was 2014, 271, 323, 379, 702 OPS with 96 strikeouts and 9 home runs, 66 RBIs. And then in 2013, he had 289, 374, 412, 787 with 15 home runs and 82 RBIs. So they're basically the same player, just in terms of output, kind of like we said earlier. That just kind of puts some numbers to the theory of how similar of players they are. And then actually, if you go, you know, if you were consistent with the years and compared Billy Butler's 2012 and 2013 to Morales' 2012 and 2013, then Butler actually comes out ahead.
Yeah.
In that category. So, but you know, you do have a little bit more power output from Morales over his career. And like you said, 34 home runs in Anaheim, and that was, you know, his huge year, and he had he got MVP votes, and people were, you know, the Angels were going to be, you know, team to mess with because they had this great line. And then of course he has this freak leg injury after a walk-off home run when he stomps on home plate, derails the season, and who knows how much that really affected his career, because he basically missed the whole 2010 season.
Yeah, he was on pace for another 30 home runs, you know. Yep.
And then comes back and hits 22 and then 23 in consecutive seasons. So, I mean, he's shown in his few full seasons here, he's shown a little bit more consistency than Butler in terms of getting above that 20 home run mark. Now, how that'll play out in Kauffman remains to be seen. But,
There's, you know, if you look a little, I mean, things like his ground ball rate, he's hit more ground balls post after that that leg injury. So I don't know if that has something to do with it or if that's coincidence.
Here's something. Let's look at this. Let's okay. Kendrys Morales. This is everybody's favorite Billy Butler stat, right? So Kendrys Morales in 2013 went into 21 double plays.
That's his high. That's career his high.
His career highest. And he hit in 12 in 2014. But again, that wasn't a full season. That was only 98 games. The year before, he hit into 11. In 134 games. So that's actually 11 in 134 games. Bad. Is pretty decent, you know. Yeah. Whereas Billy Butler last year hit into 21. In 2013, he hit into 28. So in terms of those, now, a lot of that, I'm not sure, it doesn't say on the Baseball Reference page where he was hitting in the lineup, and specifically, it'd be too hard. You'd have to go back game by game to see where he was hitting in the lineup for each of those double plays.
Right.
So that'd be, I haven't done that yet, but that'd be an interesting little thing to do that I might do for the next show, to try and see, or just maybe if there's any research on that in general, to see what the typical, because the defense of Billy Butler,
It in splits, but yeah, like what you're, I know where you're going, is that Butler typically hit third or fourth.
Yes.
Morales probably hit lower in the lineup. Feasibly would have had fewer runners on first, less opportunities to, you know, hit. Well, I don't know. 2014, he hit cleanup most of the time, so I don't know. But that it's 2014. Let's check his career. I'm on FanGraphs, so it's like dueling sites.
Yeah, normally I'm the FanGraphs guy.
I know. Yeah, I was looking at, for different reasons. I was looking at like the weighted on base average and the weighted runs created plus and things like that. It looks like most of his at bats over his career have come batting cleanup, and then next would be batting fifth. So yeah. Similar, but
well, and in 2013 when he had his career high of 21. He had, of his, let's see, what would that be, 650-odd plate appearances, 487 were him batting fourth,
yeah,
and 166 were him batting third. So he only had 4 plate appearances in all of 2013 where he wasn't batting third or fourth, and that was his career high for,
there we go,
for grounded double play. So, I mean, that gives you a little bit, and let's just, for posterity's sake, let's just go look and see. What was the year? Okay, 2009, his really good year, he hit in 51. Let's see. Those are really the only years we have to work with. 2011 or 2012, he played almost a full season. He had 11. So let's take – we're going to take a look at 2012, and we're going to see where he hit most of the time. 2012, Kendrys Morales hit – okay, so it looks like the vast majority of his – he hit 397 plate appearances, batting fourth, 85 batting fifth, 22 batting sixth, and then 16 total between seventh, eighth, and ninth. So you're looking at 140 plate appearances where he was batting lower than fourth that year. So, I mean, quite a bit of a change there. I mean, even just, you know, fourth to fifth, because if you have a 1-2-3 inning in the first inning, and then you come up, even if your cleanup hitter gets on, you know, I mean, that's still, I mean, that puts you in for a double play position. But say, you know, if the cleanup hitter hits a double or something, I mean, you get, so it even just that one step off makes quite a bit of difference. So interesting, just a little on the spot research there on Kendrys Morales. But
you also know the first time he grounds into a double play, somebody's going to be out there going, same old guy.
Same, just Billy Butler 2.0.
You can change the number, but it's the same guy, you know, just because that's what it is. You know, that's how they go. So,
yeah,
I mean, I'm kind of optimistic, but at the same time, I'm completely open to whatever is going to happen with him, because he could just tank and I wouldn't be surprised. He could be good and I wouldn't be too surprised either. So
I mean, it's basically the Jeff Francoeur proposition, right? Where
kind of
he comes in 2011 and hey, you know, sometimes things just click right for him and people don't have him figured out quite as well as they thought they did, and he has a good season, and then who knows after that. So Morales had a little bit better pedigree than Francoeur, but all the same, you know, could be a similar
more story. Consistent, yeah.
So, well, that was the first major move that the Royals made, and there's another major move that's not been official yet, but it's all but official. And actually, before we get into that, I think we'll use this time to take just a small break. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about the other big Royals move that's making the news. So stick with us, and we'll be back on the other side to talk about more Royals news.
So look, you've got a ton of places in Kansas City that you can go to. And I wrote out this elaborate script that was going to convince you all why you needed to go to Kelly's. But then I thought, it doesn't need to be that complicated. What do you want? You want a good night out with friends. You want cheap drinks. You want good food. What can be better than beer and pizza? You've got Joe's in the back. You've got drink specials every night. And if you're not at Arrowhead tailgating, you got the Chiefs on Sundays. So tell me, what can be better than that? You need flashing lights? No, you don't need that. You don't need to spend $70 on a night out to impress a date? No. You go out to where the bartenders are going to recognize you every time you show up, in an old building that has a lot of character in a great district of Kansas City. It's that simple. Don't overthink it. Just go to Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us here on the Baseball Vault podcast. And as I mentioned before the break, we have a little bit, some other news that's not quite, we'll call it pending official, but it's all but done.
Everybody it's done.
Yeah. It's one of those things where they just have a small few details to work out, I'm sure. But the other thing that's making the news rounds for the Royals is that they had a gap at right field, and they went out and signed somebody, and it's Alex Rios, actually, from the Texas Rangers. So it's an interesting move. Mike, well, I started
interesting
off...
Interesting is a good That's a good very, buzzword for.
It's a very Royals route. I don't. But we'll go with. Why don't you lead off? I led off with my thoughts on Morales, so why don't you start with your thoughts on Rios?
Okay. Yeah, Rios is. I'm not at all surprised that they got Rios. Not at all. Last year, you'll remember towards the trade deadline and throughout August, there was reported interest between the Royals in acquiring Rios. He's a player who's had a lot of really good success in the past, but he's also had some decline to his game, a little bit of inconsistency as well. And especially last year was kind of like the real warning sign or the real scary thing, because in 131 games, he hit 4 home runs. So this is a guy who previously his low was 13 in 2011. And it's just kind of, it's curious why that would happen, especially when he was playing with the Rangers. So that's a concern to a lot of people. He's a player that does not walk a lot. He doesn't strike out a whole lot either. So he's very much a Royals player. He can steal some bases. He stole 42 bases in 2013, and he's going to be, you know, 34 coming up on this season. So, you know, that's not too bad. That was a career high. He had 18 home runs in a couple of different seasons. He's had 20 homers and 20 stolen bases, 20 and 30. So there's a lot of talent here. And there's actually a track record here, but at the same time, there's age and there's last season. And so what the Royals are really looking at, I think, is that they're expecting a bounce back. And they expect to see the same guy from 2013, Alex Rios, who hit 278, got on base 324 on base percentage, and slugged 432. Perfectly acceptable numbers, hit 18 homers, stole 40 bases, probably won't steal 40 again, but... they're expecting that kind of guy to show up in right field for a full season. The issue that I have with it is the money. And the money, he's going to get $11 million. It is only 1 year, but it's still $11 million, which is quite a lot for a guy like Rios. You know, if you value one win above replacement at $5.5 million, you're asking him to be a two-war player. Last year, he was a 0.2 WAR player. So he was a replacement level last year, which isn't good, obviously.
It's replacement level.
especially when you're paying him $11 million. But the seasons prior to that was, according to Fangraphs, he was 3.1 in 2013. He was 4.2 in 2012. In 2011, okay, he was negative 1.1, so I'm not really sure what happened there. But 3.4 in 2009, and even had a couple of 5-WAR seasons in 2007, 2008 with the Blue Jays. So he's done a lot of things. Now, some of that is going to be defense, especially earlier in his career. And right now, you can't really expect him to be great defensively. So that's a concern. But what I think you're going to get out of him is a guy who doesn't walk much, doesn't strike out a lot. And if he can regain that power, that might be something that the Royals really get out of him. If he's hitting sixth or seventh in the lineup, you're probably okay. If he has to move up and hit fifth, even third or fourth or second, you might run into some issues. At the same time, last year, he did hit 30 doubles. He had 8 triples. So it's not like he was Nori Aoki, you know, who basically hit singles all the time. So there's a little bit of pop there. And in a place like Kauffman, where there's wide alleys and right and left field, you know, and right center, left center, that might play for him and give him a big kind of a bonus while he's hitting. So I'm interested to kind of see that. But we should have put predictions, because this would have been the easiest one to do it. The kind of uproar that we saw, and this was yesterday when they made the announcement that there was an agreement, nobody liked it. I don't think anybody liked it on Twitter. But when you kind of look at who's out there and what the alternatives are, you know, Melky Cabrera, who we talked about as the Royals having interest, he signed earlier in the week, last week with the White Sox. And so he's not available. And I think he would have been a guy that would have been easily available for the Royals. There was interest there, I think even mutual interest. You know, we talked about, you know, on your wish list was Matt Kemp, and he got traded to San Diego. The Royals missed out on that. You know, Yasmani Tomas signed with the Diamondbacks, so he was gone. And I think a lot of people are showing more concern now, you know, after all the hype with him. And even guys like Michael Saunders, who I really liked as an option, he got traded to Toronto for a, you know, kind of a depth starting pitcher in Jay Happ that the Royals didn't have to give up. And so the options kind of boiled down to
And Rios. Michael Morse was signed.
Michael
too.
Morse, yeah. Michael Morse, he signed today for 2 years. The numbers keep bouncing around, but he's, I think they settled on 2 years, $16 million total. Originally, it was people were trying to report as 2 years and $8 million, which would have been $4 million a year, which is ludicrous for a guy who can actually hit for some power. So two for 16 makes sense, and I think the Royals would have been open to that, but reports with Morse are that he wanted to be in the NL because he didn't want a DH. So, you know, if he wants to be in the National League, well, there you go. That's all you can do. You can't really, unless you want to overpay for the guy, that's all you can do. Another option would have been Colby Rasmus, who is low batting average, high strikeout guy, boom or bust. Not really impressed with that. Nori Aoki could have come back, and I think he'd have been okay, but there's also a certain level of diversity in the hitting lineup that you need. And the Royals have a lot of guys who get singles. They don't have a lot of guys who might be able to hit for some power. And Rios, if he can get it back, has some of that power. Another guy would have been Chris DeNorfia, who would be a cheap option, but I'm iffy on him. And other than that, it would have been trying to trade for Justin Upton, which would have cost Danny Duffy or Yordano Ventura, and I don't think either of those would have ever been realistic. So the options were pretty thin. There wasn't a whole lot out there, and the Royals were kind of limited in what they could do here. And I think the money for Rios comes down to basically they didn't want to sign him for more than 1 year. And so they had to pay a premium for this 1 year in order to actually get him to agree to just a one-year deal. So it's a big hit financially, but in the end, you know, if he's even average, it's not a huge loss financially. You know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, Alex Rios at $11 million isn't as devastating as, you know, if Eric Hosmer can't hit.
Right.
So it's, you know, I get up for, but there weren't a lot of options, and there's still a little glimmer of upside left in Rio. So
yeah, and it's $11 million that you get to walk away from in 2016 if it doesn't pan out.
Yep.
So whereas last year, you know, people were looking to sign Carlos Beltran, and that, you know, from everything that we heard, for the Royals, it would have had to have been probably a 3-year contract.
Yeah.
So
he signed, you would have been locked 3 years in. And $45 million, and I think the Royals probably would have been at least that, if not more.
So you would have been locked into somebody, you know, who even older. Had he declined, even older, and granted he had more skill to begin with, but had he declined in a similar fashion, then it's harder to walk away from that. So there's at least that little bit of positive.
And the Royals were in on Torrey Hunter. I mean, I thought it was a virtual certainty that they were going to sign him.
That was like the most Royals thing ever. Yeah, and that had and all over it.
And he signed for $10.5 million with the Twins. So, I mean, would you rather have Alex Rios, 34 years old, at $11 million, or Torrey Hunter at 40 years old at 10.5? And I don't think that's close. I think that's Rios easily. Mm-hmm. Even if Hunter had a better season last year, you can count 40-year-olds who had good seasons, you know, in the last 20 years, probably on one hand. Yeah. It's just, you know, there's a reason those guys don't last, and it's because the bat speed goes, the power goes, they get hurt, they're just not the same player. And, you know, Rios, at least there's a little bit of a chance that he regains what he used to be.
Yeah, and you know, for me, again, it's one of those things where if I just walk up to somebody and I say, hey, the Royals signed Alex Rios to play right field, you'd be like, okay, you know,
I like that. But then, you know, you can't just take things like that. You have to evaluate in the total context of everything. And it's like, okay, Royals sign Alex Rios, I like it. And then Royals sign Alex Rios for $11 million. I don't quite feel the same about that, you know. And it's one of the things where you look at it and you say, okay, Royals sign Kendrys Morales, they're paying him $8.5 million. They sign Lou Kochever, they're paying him $5 million. They sign Alex Rios, they're paying him $11 million. And so you're looking at nearly $24 million. And all of that is predicated on hoping for a bounce back from all of them. You know, they've all had good, they've all been good in the past. You know, Hochever had a really good 2013 season as a reliever. Kendrys Morales has had a few good seasons, like we mentioned, and Rios, like you just talked about, has had multiple good seasons in the past. So, but it comes back to what we've talked about many times on this show, optimism, you know, planning on people bouncing back should not be a strategy. And the only real kind of, it's not even really a huge issue right now for me, but just kind of in the back of my head, the thing that keeps nagging at me about some of these deals is just like, what I was really hoping for and what I was thinking with the Royals making the World Series, finally taking that step, being relevant, being in the news, being having a positive light attached to their name now, was that they'd be kind of done with this philosophy of hoping for the best, searching for that bargain basement guy coming off a bad year, that hopefully something clicks and they can kind of ride the lightning for a little bit and you know, get a good year or two out of them. And I mean, you know, maybe it's just the reality of the market that the Royals are in, and that's truly all they can afford. You know, before we always kind of thought it was an ROI thing, ROI being the accounting term or finance term, you know, return on investment, where like if you're, you know, it doesn't even make a ton of, even stuff like the Jose Guillen signing and the Gilmesh signing and things like that, those guys were getting paid a lot of money. And, you know, that was good that the owner was going to give them a lot of money, but he wasn't seeing any return on that investment because it wasn't spiking in ticket sales. The team wasn't doing much better, things like that. So, you know, it becomes harder and harder to pump that money into players when you don't see any return because the team doesn't get any better. You don't sell more tickets. Well, now that the team is better, they've sold more tickets, they sold playoff tickets, all the merchandise and everything, I was kind of thinking and hoping that it'd be something where, you know, they say, okay, you know, we're not gonna become the Yankees overnight or the Dodgers overnight, but we're gonna extend the payroll by $10 million, by $15 million, so we can sign that one guy, you know. And, excuse me, when you look at it, is it worth, and that's something that the Royals have to balance as well, you know, and every team has to balance, but given the constraints of their budget, and for whatever team, you know, whatever their budget is, you still have to kind of operate within these parameters of, do we say, okay, we got $23.5 million, do we spend that on going out and getting Max Scherzer, or going out and signing Victor Martinez and try and get him away from a division rival and put him in the lineup and bolster the middle of that lineup? Or, you know, do you split that money up and you sign three players and you enhance what was already the biggest strength in the bullpen, hopefully, by getting Lou Kochever recovering from Tommy John? And there's, you know, I mean, every player is different, but with the advances in medical technology, there's no reason to think that Hochever can't come back and have a successful season, you know, because lots of people have done it. But, and then, you know, you fill a hole in right field with Alex Rios, you fill a hole that was left in Billy Butler with Kendrys Morales, with your DH. And so it's a tough line to toe for Dayton Moore. And it's, you know, it's not an enviable position for any general manager to have to deal in those constraints. You know, I mean, some have it easier than others when you're, you know, Andrew Friedman, who's in Los Angeles now, and you've got a $250 million payroll. instead of splitting that $25 million between three needs, you just pay $25 million for each of the three needs.
Right.
So it's a little bit easier for some.
Within an hour span of each other.
Right.
You just go do everything.
Yeah, why the hell not, you know?
Oh, my God,
but,
yeah.
But for the most part, you know, 90% of the teams in the league are dealing within these parameters. Okay, we have a certain budget that's going to be between, for most teams, you know, $80 and $120 million. And so you've got to make these tough decisions, and it is difficult. And like I said, I don't envy Dayton more, but at the same time, I was kind of hoping, you know, if the Royals are hoping for these bounce backs, my hope was for the Royals to kind of shake off this mentality of hoping to get lucky and depending on that hope and go out and get a sure thing, you know. And you see other teams that are in bigger markets but similar positions. You know, you like the White Sox, and the White Sox probably aren't a fair comparison, but like the Mariners and, you know, even the Padres are out there making moves, signing people and making trades and stuff. And you know, teams that, again, like I said, are bigger markets but typically have been kind of similar teams to the Royals in terms of their evolution. And they're out making, you know, making bigger signings. So you kind of hope that the Royals would take that, you know, not only take the step on the field, but take that step forward into a relevant piece of baseball, you know, as an organization by making those big moves and asserting themselves of, you know, we're not just hoping we can do that again. We're here to stay. We're a competitive team now. We're a baseball, a playoff team. We're the American League champions until somebody dethrones us. So, you know, we're here to stay, and we're not backing down from anybody. And it still kind of feels like the Royals are playing that, you know, that little brother following the big brother to go, you know, hang out with all his friends kind of role of, hey, excuse me.
Can I play too?
can we have some time to talk with you about Victor Martinez? Oh, he's already signed. Okay, never mind.
Okay, never mind.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, it's like this. That's what it feels like.
Sorry,
you know,
to bother you.
Yeah, sorry.
Heidi, you know, ho, have a good day.
Yeah.
They're Canada. You know, they're basically Canada.
Yeah, more or less. And maybe that's unfair on my part, but at this, you know, it just, that's what it feels like to me, just based on what we've heard from people. And so yeah. I was kind of hoping they were getting off that. But back to the Alex Rios thing, I heard on 610 on Danny Parkin's show on the way home from work today, he had a, and I cannot remember for the life of me what this guy's name was, but the play-by-play guy for the Texas Rangers, and he was even the general manager for him for a while. And so he was talking about Alex Rios and said that basically more or less exactly what you said, Mike, just to kind of validate your hypothesis, that if he's your guy that's hitting sixth or seventh and you don't base a lineup around him, he's going to be much more successful. And I think that's probably where he's going to fall. You know, he might bat fifth some days, but I think he's probably going to be your 6-7 guy. And that's where he should be. And then I thought it was funny though, the Texas Rangers guy said, yeah, you know, if he's the kind of guy that, you know, if he hits sixth or seventh and, you know, he can hit between 280 and 300 and 15 home runs and 80 RBIs, you know, I think he's going to be all right. And I was like, well, yeah, no shit, man. I mean, if you're hitting 280 to 300 with 15 home runs and 80 RBIs, you know, that's going to be one of those, assuming he just plays, you know, solid defense, that's going to be another one of those 3-4-5 war seasons for him. So, yeah, absolutely. If that's what Alex Rios gives the Royals this year, hits 280, call it 285, 15 home runs, 80 RBIs, you know, maybe hits borderline 800 OPS, then that was worth every cent of that $11 million. Because that's going to, I mean, that would impact this lineup so much more. And that probably means that the rest of the lineup is doing that much better as well. So if that's what the Royals get from Alex Rios, then absolutely worth all of it for that 1 year contract. So
yeah, I think they've always kind of done this where they expect this guy or that guy
you know, Mike Moustakas is going to hit 30 home runs. Sal Perez is going to hit 20. Oh, yeah. You know, they're just going to do it. You know, they've always kind of done that. And I think they expect that again, this time out of Hosmer and Moustakas and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They really haven't done that. And, you know, none of these guys have really hit that point.
And just to kind of bolster that, the Royals, it seems like, don't distinguish between a 25 home run hitter and a guy who has hit 25 home runs before in his career.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, like, someone like Rios, you know, has maybe hit 20-some home runs in a year, but he's not really that guy. He's more of a 15 home run guy, but that's not the way the Royals look at it.
You hope for more. You're expecting maybe, you know, 12, 15 or whatever. But even with, like, Hosmer, I mean, Hosmer only hit 9 homers, and, yeah, he missed a month, but he still hit 9 homers. So it's not as if, you know, these guys are right there on the cusp. They've still had a lot of up and down between Hosmer, Moustakas, Sal Perez, Lorenzo Cain, you know, who still hasn't really had a lot of power. You know, Alcides Escobar seems to be on again, off again. Omar Infante was, you know, injured either on the DL or just playing hurt most of last season. And so, yeah, those guys could all turn it on at the same time. That's entirely possible. But at the same time, you've seen Moustakas for 2,000 plate appearances. You know basically who he is. And barring a big adjustment or whatever, he's probably going to continue on the same path. And Hosmer's the same way. Even Escobar now, as he's gotten older, I think today's his birthday, so he's 27, 28 years old. Same guy, you know, you can't really expect those guys to make big changes and big leaps just because you think they might. And so it's tough to bank on that. And so, you know, there's a lot of hope in this lineup. And if everything clicks, they'll be pretty good. But there's a pretty decent shot that, you know, maybe one guy breaks out, but another guy fades. You know, maybe Lorenzo Cain only hits 250 next year. How much does that cancel out something like Moustakas hitting 250? You know, that would be a big jump for Moustakas. It'd be a big drop for Cain. And so, you know, what is that impact on the overall lineup? So I'm not entirely – I'm just – it's tough. It's tough for them to feel the lineup that you feel entirely comfortable with. They're not going to trade most of these guys because they've drafted them. They've brought them up. They've been the face of the team, and they've just come off of an AL championship. So it's even harder to break up the band. You know, you look at what Billy Beane's done in Oakland, where he's traded off Josh Donaldson and they let Lester go and, you know, all these different moves. Well, that's a lot easier when you haven't made it to the World Series.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem, you know, he's responding to a wild card game loss. He's not responding to, you know, stranding the tie-in run on third in the seventh game of the World Series at home.
Yeah.
It's a lot different for each of those front offices. But I would have liked to have seen him. You look at a team like the Blue Jays or the Marlins or the White Sox, those teams have gotten a lot better this offseason. They've signed, you know, a lot of guys. The Blue Jays went out. They got Josh Donaldson. They got you know, Michael Saunders, and they look like a better team. The White Sox went out. They got Adam LaRoche, who basically replaces Paul Konerko and Adam Dunn at the same time. They got Melky Cabrera, who I think is a pretty good hitter. They got Jeff Samardzija for nothing, basically. And, you know, went and got David Robertson, who's going to be one of the better closers in the league. And, you know, that's four guys right there. They made just a huge splash on. And, you know, they still have holes. I don't think that they're going to be closer to the 2013 Royals than the 2014 Royals, but they're not going quietly.
No.
So, you know, they've gotten better. Detroit, you know, maybe they've gotten better. Maybe they've basically stayed the same. They, you know, traded Rick Porcello for Yoenis Cespedes. I don't know if that really makes them better or not, but, you know, it's something. So you got all these teams that are kind of doing things. The Marlins traded for a few guys, signed Morse, like we said. And the Royals have, you know, they got Morales and they got Rios, and they're kind of hoping for everything else. And they still have to get a pitcher to replace James Shields. in some fashion, and I don't know where that's going to come from. I don't think they're going to be able to make a trade to do that, but I guess we'll see. But you know, there's only a couple of starting pitchers. It's kind of an ugly list. I think a lot of people kind of took for granted that Ervin Santana would return, which would have been a good fit, I think. But he's with the Twins now, so
it feels a lot like the Royals organization is building the 2015 team based on October of 2014 and nothing else. You know, I mean, it seems like they're thinking, oh, it just took the playoffs and that's all for this team to really wake up and all these players to be who they're supposed to be. And so now we can just depend on Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas hitting home runs like they did in the playoffs. And it's like, well,
sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
You know, sometimes I will say that. Yeah. Sometimes with a young team, that has kind of struggled to truly take that step, when they finally do and realize they can, you know, and I made the comparison to the, to bring it into another sport, the New York Giants in 2007, when they first, you know, they beat the undefeated Patriots in the Super Bowl. And then they kind of sustained, you know, they had a little bit different swagger to them after that for the next few years, you know. So there is some,
beat the Patriots again too.
Yes, there you go. 4 years later, there is some legitimacy in that. But at the same time, you can't depend on it.
That can't.
You'll want it to happen.
That can't be your strategy.
Yeah, you still have to evaluate the whole thing.
You don't go into the office November 10th and item one is we're going to improve because we did this. It's just not how it works. So that's, you know, but that's kind of what the Royals have always done. So they're going to sink or swim based on that. And I guess, you know, hopefully the light switch did flip on for these guys, and you do get to see everybody kind of come back and do what they've got. I mean, you've got two average starters in Jason Vargas and Jeremy Guthrie. If Ventura can continue on the path that he started, and if Duffy can get some more innings and go, well now you just kind of got to get that fifth starter. And there are guys who are useful. They're just not ideal. And at this stage, other than Max Scherzer, who's not going to sign with the Royals, there's not really an ideal guy who's out there. So that's going to be difficult to see what the Royals are able to do to fill that spot. And I think Dayton Moore at the press conference today, when they announced Kendra Morales, was, I think he said something to Josh Vernier about they're looking for one or two more pitchers, which is encouraging, because I think they recognize that they kind of need to get more candidates and see what hits and see if they can build some flexibility that way. So, you know, who that ends up being, I don't know. I mean, they've been kind of linked to this guy or that guy, but for the most part, you know, the guys who are out there are, they're all flawed in one way or another, either old, you know, or they've been hurt, or they've just been inconsistent. So there's not really a slam dunk guy out there. It's just going to have to be, you know, who fits this team and who fits financially too, because they're starting to get up to about where I think they can go. I think they're probably at about $103 million or something in payroll. You know, arbitration case is still to be figured out, but probably around there. So they might be able to get, you know, if they can get two guys cheap, that might be it. Or maybe they have to make a trade and move one of Greg Holland or Wade Davis. So, you know, just to kind of free up some space on the payroll. It's not going to be easy. But I guess the last 30 years haven't been very easy either.
Yeah. So, and then, that's kind of been it for the Royals. But one thing we did kind of want to throw out there, not necessarily in relation to the Royals, but sort of tangentially related. We talked about the Padres a couple times. Well, news came out today, a little bit before we recorded the show here, that the Padres are in major talks with the Rays about a possible big-time trade, the centerpiece of which is Will Myers, former Royals minor league player of the year. Not just Royals minor league player of the year, but minor leagues minor league player of the year. which is interesting. So, and we won't talk about this too long, but something, a thought that I'm going to propose to you, Mike, is we've got Will Myers here, who was documented as the first player in history to win major league or minor league player of the year and not play for the team that he was on at the time, you know, so because he was traded away by the Royals before actually playing in the major leagues for him after winning that award, which had never been done before. So traded to the Rays.
I didn't know that, but that sounds right.
I heard that on the radio on the way home.
That's crazy.
So I'm assuming Danny Parkins, who was the one who said it, was true. And I remember hearing something similar to that effect at the time. Now, and then you look, he goes to the Rays and he comes up the next year, wins Rookie of the Year, deals with some injuries last year, has some difficulties, some struggles, but now possibly being traded again. So in the span of 3 years, he could be going on his third team after winning Minor League Player of the Year and Rookie of the Year, and just having as much hype and talent around him as he's always had. So it kind of makes you wonder, and just from knowing, you know, hearing about how he rose through the ranks, there were some whispers of how he wasn't necessarily the most receptive to some of the Royals coaching, and that he was confident in his approach. And I think, you know, I think if you ask me, I think a lot of that is why he was successful, because the Royals they have their philosophy and they want their hitters to hit to their philosophy, a swing away philosophy that they have. And that's not the hitter that Will Myers has. And I remember kind of thinking that when I would kind of hear these slight whispers or whatever, when he was coming up, that I was like, that's a good thing. You know, if he can just be the hitter that he is, know what his strengths are, and deal with it. But at the same time, you know, that can kind of put you on the wrong footing with an organization, because, you know, if you're not receptive to coaching, then people start wondering like, oh man, this guy's going to be a headache when we try and go through arbitration, when we try and sign a contract, if we want to sign him when he becomes a free agent. And, you know, when you're running an organization, you have to think about those things and they matter. And maybe that's what leads to it. I mean, you know, you've heard all the same things I have. You know what I know, Mike. Is that just me looking into this too much? What do you think?
No, I think there's something to that. I mean, when he was drafted and did his showcase, he asked them to turn the fountains on because he wanted to hit some into them, which is, you know, this is a kid out of high school, you know, has a commit to North Carolina in his hand, basically, you know, telling a major league staff, hey, I want to hit balls into the fountains while they're on. You know, that's take some sack there. And then, you know, throughout, you know, you kind of heard this after the fact, but things about like talking to George Brett, and George Brett gives him advice and he passes on it. You know, that's kind of ballsy to listen to a Hall of Famer and pass on his advice. When they traded him to Tampa, there were some early reports going into that spring training that they recognized that he wasn't a complete ball player, you know, with, you know, some of that I think was window dressing just to kind of play with the expectations and also provide some cover for them to keep him in the minors to play with the service time. But, you know, there is a little bit of attitude to him, and I think that might be part of it. The Rays right now are basically kind of looking at being willing to rebuild. You know, they traded Shields 1 year, they trade Price the next, and you know, Zobrist might not be far behind. They're open to moving these guys. They traded Matt Joyce today, so that's another guy gone. So if they're looking to get rid of Myers, I think the top name I've heard is Austin Hedges, I believe is his name. He's a catcher. So, you know, they're looking for like prospects, and they're looking to rebuild, and they're looking to kind of get things kind of reset a little bit. So,
and that's a full on legit rebuild, because Will Myers is a guy
should be
that
a part of
your rebuild. With.
Yeah.
So that's why it leads even more credence to this idea that maybe he's a little difficult, because
why would you deal a guy?
Yeah, I mean, he's what, 25?
Yeah, he's got four. He's not even that.
He's got to be 23, 24, because he was like 21 or 22 when they traded him. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's a young guy.
With you know, a year and a half of team control burnt, there, you know, he's got about 5 years of team control left. So,
yeah, I mean,
there's got to be a little bit of extra that gives them reason to want to move him. And it could definitely be something in the coachability or anything like that. It could have been something that they see that is going to be a bad habit down the line. I think he's still going to be a guy who can hit 30 homers a year. But at the same time, you know, it could be another situation where the guy only hits 15, doesn't respond to coaching, and is generally a poor guy in the clubhouse. And I'm not saying Will Myers is that guy or will be that guy, but you've seen it enough times. That's enough to get a guy moved, is to just be bad all around with the way that they're trying to manage, you know, their rosters and their personnel and a lineup at the big league level. It's, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And sometimes that has to be considered, especially if it's a valuable asset like Myers, who could pay off a couple of guys. I mean, the Padres have some starting pitching they could move. They have some prospects they can move. So, I mean, it could just be getting his value moved now before, you know, they start to notice all the warts fully. So it's definitely interesting. It'd be nice if the Royals could maybe get a guy like that.
Yeah.
And that would solve some problems.
Yeah, and his birthday is December 10th, so he literally just turned 24. Yeah. December 10th, 1990. So
that's right.
He'll be it'll be his age 24 season next year. And they're already looking to trade him after he's won Rookie of the Year for their organization. So
what's weird is that, like, Justin Upton was probably in his, like, his third or fourth season by then.
God.
Which is just crazy. It's like, okay.
Yeah, some of those guys, like, let's see. when the Tigers traded Rick Porcello.
Right? Yeah,
he's
younger than the NL Rookie of the Year last year.
He's been around forever, but he's not even 26 yet. He's 25.
Yeah,
he's been. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's had 6 years in the majors. You know, 6 full years in the majors. So that's just it's just so weird. Like, baseball is so weird with how all that works, because some people can develop so much faster than others. That it is kind of funny that just the age of sometimes you don't realize people who have been around for a while are still pretty young. So, because you would think, like, oh, Rick Porcello, he's probably,
you've heard, you know, his most name guys forever. Yeah,
as long as he's been around, you think he'd be heading into his 30s and, you know, maybe not worth a risk or whatever, but he's just heading into his prime. So just kind of funny thinking about that.
We talked about this maybe a month or so ago, but Lorenzo Cain is like a week older than Billy Butler.
Yeah.
You wouldn't figure that, because Butler's been in the majors since 2007.
Yeah.
And Cain's only really been a regular since, you know, 2012. So.
And I had to keep reminding myself of that this year. I'm just like, Butler's only 28, you know, so he... You know, that's kind of right in the meaty part of the prime for a hitter.
Yep.
So, you know, he had a bad year last year, but he was just as good of a bounce back candidate as Kendrys Morales was, just based on his age and his past history. So kind of interesting when you start throwing around, and someone like Rainey Jezerle has done a ton of research, much more than any of us have,
mm-hmm.
about age and how it factors in with baseball and stuff like that. So there's definitely a lot of interesting stuff there, but
it's true. It's you know, the Royals are never really on that kind of cusp where they have that guy. You know, like Finnegan was the only guy since, I think, Jeff Granger, who was making his major league debut the same year he was drafted. Maybe it was Jeff Austin. It was one of those dead year drafts.
I think Granger, that sounds right.
Yeah, one of those two. And, you know, that... You look at guys like Mike Leake and Chris Sale and others who, you know, they get drafted and they're making their debut that same year. It's, you know, that's a pretty rare company. So, and I think Porcello was, you know, if he's coming out of high school, and was it like the year after than he made his debut or something like that. I mean, that's crazy. So
yeah, he was 20 when he made his debut. So year and a half, depending on how old he was when he was drafted. So
when I was 20, I was working at Walmart. So
yeah, I was, I don't know, being an idiot when I was 20, probably not throwing.
Yeah, I was doing that too. So.
Yeah, not throwing pitches and made to major leaguers. So quite impressive. But just thought that was kind of an interesting aside, just because there's been so much talk about Will Myers over the years with the Royals that, you know, maybe the Royals aren't the only ones who would have gotten rid of Will Myers in that scenario, or will get rid of Will Myers in the future. So just an interesting thought. But with that, I think we're going to wrap it up tonight. We've covered the major Royals news, and like Mike mentioned, the you know, Dayton Moore kind of hinted. I feel like he always kind of hints at this whenever they make a signing in the off season that, oh, there's more to come, you know, and sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. So, you know, we'll see. Hopefully,
I would say I think there's something.
I think they're working on something. We've followed this enough to know what the Royals do and their patterns and stuff. It kind of feels like they're working on something. Like once you start hearing the Royals name a lot for people and they've signed a couple people,
they kind of get going. Yeah. And we're in the groove now.
Yeah. And then, and it finally gets to the point where they kind of feel like, well, we can't wait around anymore. We got to pull the trigger on something.
Yeah.
And not that they're making a move.
It's early November.
Yeah. Usually it's far too early. But I think having the successful year like they did last year has kind of given them a little bit, at least made them a little bit more confident that they can stick around and kind of wait for things to flesh out before really diving in. So, and I think they knew going into the offseason that probably how they know every offseason, if they want to make a really big splash, it's going to have to be with the trade because they just can't afford to compete with teams in the free agent market and go out there and sign, you know, the Max Scherzers of the world or whoever. So if they're going to fill that need for a pitcher, I would highly imagine it's going to come from a trade.
Maybe. Who knows? I would put my money on Chris Young as one of the guys. Fly ball pitcher, throws a lot of strikes. Pretty smart pitcher, actually. There's a growing trend of the high fastball, and because that's a difficult pitch to hit. And from perceived velocity, it seems faster because it's closer to your eye range, you know, physiologically. So it looks faster because he doesn't throw hard, but he gets a lot of fly balls and they're not hit that hard. And so you combine that with Kauffman Stadium, with the Royals outfield defense, that looks like a fit to me. But that's completely conjecture. It's not based on anything. I don't have sources. So my source is Lesky, and Lesky doesn't tell me who his source actually is. So,
yeah, and I think Edinson Volquez
is another one. Yeah, I think he
seems very Royals-y.
He seems like the 2 year with a third year team option type of guy. Yep. We'll see. Brandon Morrow was a nice idea too, but he just signed with the Padres. But he's also coming off more injuries than I had remembered. So I don't want him as much.
Morrow or Volquez?
Brandon Morrow.
Okay.
He's had shoulder and wrist and hand problems.
Yeah.
So it's like, that makes me wary. Yeah. So I'm okay with. And plus, you know, in San Diego, they're not really contending. They're still kind of rebuilding. So that's a good situation for them to try to get a guy who might, you know, be lightning in a bottle, but if it just is him giving them 150 innings and rebuilding value, that's okay too. It's a lot different than the Royals, who are looking to return to the World Series and you know, get that extra 90 feet.
Yeah.
So
and that should be different. That should be the slogan for next year. Get that extra 90 feet. But if I had to guess, I think Wade Davis or Greg Holland, one of those two is gone.
I think so too.
Before next season. And to be honest, if the Royals are smart, they'll make that move. Because, yeah. I mean, if I will have a ton more faith in Dayton Moore if he trades one of them for no other reason than it would show that he kind of learned from the Joaquin Soria scenario situation mm-hmm. where he had tons of trade value, really valued in the league, you know, for a top tier closer, and then boom, gone in an instant, and you just have to cut him, and they got nothing for him. And he didn't really help the team at the time. And now Greg Holland and Wade Davis are helping this team quite a bit. So it's a little bit harder to get rid of them. But at the same time, based on the volatility of relievers, that's one of those things where hopefully that'll happen. As much as I like having both those guys, don't get me wrong. I love having both them on the team. But
there's value there.
Yeah, considering if Luke Hochaver can be the 2013 Hochaver and Kelvin Herrera can be what he's been, then – you know, they've got Scott Frazier for a full year. I mean, I think they'll be set in the bullpen if they lose one of those two. So hopefully they can get a good return if they do. But that's just my hunch.
Sounds about right. I mean, they've got the arms, and if Hochaver can come back and, you know, they've got Frazier, they've got Hochaver, they've got Herrera, they've got Davis, you can run with that. Right, and Collins looked better towards the end, especially in October. He looked okay. Yeah. So, you know, I they've got stuff. They've got guys that they can put in there. And there's also, you know, if Michael Marriott makes some kind of advance, you know, or other minor leaguers can kind of catch it in Omaha and end up coming up. Because guys like Holland and Herrera, they really weren't highly touted. Yeah. At any point until they made it to the big leagues and started doing it. So, you know, it just takes one guy to kind of use a new pitch or add a mile or two to his fastball, and all of a sudden, there he is. He's getting guys out at the big league level. So, you know, I think in relievers, Dayton Moore has not had a problem finding relievers to fill his bullpen ever.
Yeah.
Like that's if he has one strength that you can bank on, it's that he can find guys – who can do that. And, you know, we didn't bring this guy up, but what's his name? Jandel Gustave. He was a Rule 5 pick by the Red Sox, traded to the Royals for, I think, cash. I don't remember who said it on Twitter, but they said that he might be the hardest throwing guy in the Royals bullpen if he sticks. And when you're looking at a bullpen that includes Kelvin Herrera,
yeah,
that's saying something. So
yeah, and hopefully he's closer to Kelvin Herrera than he is Jeremy Jeffress.
It's true.
So
that's a fair point.
But it's interesting because I heard somebody on the radio, I can't remember who it was, make that same comment that Dayton Moore has been very good at developing relievers, and I kind of snicker because in my head I always want to say, has he been? He's more so than developing really good relievers. He's been really good at failing at developing starters.
Right.
That's what relievers are.
Hochaver and Davis, yeah, they're kind of happy accidents.
Yeah. And I mean, the only true guy that I can remember the Royals drafting and basically targeting to be a reliever from the get-go is Lewis Coleman. I don't really...
Yeah.
I mean, did they draft Greg Holland as a reliever? Because he's got the repertoire of a starting pitcher, basically.
I cannot remember
because he wasn't very... They didn't really talk about him much when he was drafted, so I can't remember what the plan was with him.
No, he wasn't anything until he just started striking a bunch of guys out in the minors, and I think he's relieved the whole time. I'd have to go back and look to be sure, but I think he's basically been a reliever for the whole time. There was some talk of maybe he'll start after his first season, but
yeah,
you know they made the right choice to not. So
yeah,
to put it lightly.
If yes, indeed. So hopefully the Royals will, Dayton Moore will be right and they won't be done and they'll make some more moves and we'll have more stuff to talk about because it's fun to have news to talk about when we do this show. Much more fun than speculation or anything else. So
it really is.
Yes, much, much more so. With that, we're going to end the show. So thanks for tuning in. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn.
I need to give my final verdict here.
Oh, that's right. I totally forgot.
The Crown Town Ale is almost, it's almost gone. It's pretty good. It's probably not the best smokestack or limited edition I've ever had, but it's definitely worthy. And you can, I don't know if they have this at Kelly's Westport Inn, but they do have a wide variety of other Boulevard and domestic beer products and choices for your going out and partying needs.
So
There we go.
If we want to put this on the Royals Twitter fan scale, from Sungwoo to Fake Ned, where would you rank the beer? Sungwoo, of course, being the best.
It is about, I would say it's 80% to Sungwoo.
80% to Sungwoo. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I'm gonna throw a name out there to equate to that, because I don't want to. You know, I'm fine dogging on Fake Ned, but I'm not gonna throw anybody else under the bus.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So I guess that's where we go. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, I would say it's. I would get another bottle.
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The beer connoisseur himself has spoken. So, Crown Club Ale. Is that what it's called? Crown Club.
Crown Ale? Town Ale.
Crown Town Ale.
Yep.
Worth the effort, apparently.
So, it was, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Good to know. If I can get my hands on one, which I probably can't, I will try it.
If you can't, there's a bunch of places in Lawrence I hear that have it. Like I got the, like when I went to the place where I got this, they had like 8 boxes of it.
Okay.
So, and I didn't even think it was going to make it to Lawrence. So, that was a nice surprise. So, you'll probably be able to get it.
All right. Well, I'll have to try it if I can. so yeah, with that, we'll leave you. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr. With me, as always, the indubitable and, well,
mildly tipsy.
Mildly tipsy.
A little bit.
Michael Engel, the Crown Town connoisseur himself. thanks for stopping in. Stopping by. We'll be keep pumping out these shows in the off season. We try and do one every week. Some weeks there's just really crap to talk about, and you guys probably don't want to hear us ramble about nonsensical stuff. Maybe you do. If you do, let us know. We'll get on here and we'll ramble. We can talk about other shit too. We got the off season. We can talk about other sports, movies, TV, whatever.
I just started New Girl over the weekend, and
there you go. I started Sons of Anarchy last week, so we
can talk. I'm not going to get to that.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk. If you guys are interested, let us know. But for that, hopefully we'll have some, things will start heating up a little bit more, and we'll have some more legit Royals news to talk about. But until then, thanks for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.